Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:36 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is July 14th. And when we look at the NASDAQ, we had the downside key day reversal yesterday. The key to the key is downside follow through, and we have not had follow through in here today. I do think that this is one of the more difficult trading environments that I've encountered in my career so far, because generally speaking, when you see a downward dynamic of that size from a big round number, it would be reasonable to conclude that it is a peak of medium-term significance rather than simply a couple of day peak. But we're in a period where there is clear momentum driven animus behind or animating this bull market. And that there is, for example, when we look at Tesla, there are 10,000 new buyers from Robinhood alone coming through and buying the share every hour. And it had a whopping downward dynamic yesterday, and yet did not follow through on the downside in here today, and in fact was in positive territory. Well, this is perhaps telling us that there has been an inconsistency. Now, one thing that we've certainly seen over the course of decades has been that very persistent and consistent trends often lose their consistency at the penultimate high. There is certainly the potential that that may be the case in here right now. Now, when we think about the S&P 500, then it pulled back yesterday, but then it recouped most of the loss in here today and was in positive territory. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was also in positive territory, up over 500 points, and confirming support in the region of the 26,000 point level, but also confirming support in the region of the trend mean. And the Russell 2000 also has been somewhat more firm, certainly holding at least this very short-term sequence of higher reaction lows within the one-month range. So there is potentially an argument to be made here that what we are in fact seeing is a broadening of the outperform of the recovery, and that there is perhaps less demand right now for the very overextended trends and perhaps more appetite for recovery candidates. But I do think it is worth paying attention to some of the worst performers as well. United Airlines, for example, was flat in here today following Delta's bad quarter, but somewhat more rosy attitude towards what its future might look like. But this is a company which has intangible values the value attached to its intangible assets is greater than its market cap, and not by a little. So effectively, the company is worthless. And there is obviously then the question of what exact value can you attach to an intangible asset like reputation when it is one of the least liked airlines around. When we think about Carnival Cruises, well, it is also obviously a company that is heavily influenced by the outlook for the coronavirus, and the outlook for the coronavirus isn't getting better. In fact, arguably it's getting worse. We have got lockdowns again in California, and certainly one thing I noticed last week was that traffic had picked up measurably between Tuesday and Wednesday, and then between Wednesday and Friday. And then it has practically disappeared over the course of the last 2 days, because people are really paying attention to the fact that the number of cases, there was a statistic quoted on the radio this morning, that the number of cases in Los Angeles currently is greater than in all of Canada. So those kinds of statistics are certainly deleterious to sentiment, and certainly also really making the point to consumers that there's nothing to be gained from half measures. We've seen that the outbreak in the USA is similar to what we see in Sweden, but Sweden didn't close schools. They didn't really close any of their main businesses. But what it suggests, in fact, is that half measures don't work. You either go the whole hog in terms of rather than complete lockdown, but following the lead of countries like South Korea, Taiwan, or Hong Kong, and even in Hong Kong, they have more cases again. Well, all of this is suggesting that you need testing, retesting, contact tracing, and then a whole range of additional measures to isolate people who are infected, isolate people who have been in contact with those people, and then phone apps, and which obviously have got privacy concerns. The reality is that it's the countries that had dealt with SARS previously have subsequently learned their lessons and deployed the most effective tactics. There obviously has to be a shout out for the success that New Zealand has had in combating its own outbreak. But the reality is the vast majority of the rest of the world just simply does not have the wherewithal to really get its act together and follow that kind of lead. And what it suggests is we're going to have a long, hard slog, and that there is quite likely to be continued monetary and fiscal stimulus. So 10-year Treasury yields remain around the 60 basis point level and have been really very quiet. This is a particularly inert period for yields because there is a clear risk, not simply of deflation, but much more important than that is that we have got effective, or at least de facto, yield curve control. And I think that is perhaps one of the most important characteristics, that when we think about what we've got in terms of just observable data, forgetting for the moment exactly what central bankers are saying and simply looking at what is happening in the markets, then if we look at the spread between the 10-year and the 2-year, it's down to 46 basis points. Now, historically, if we zoom out and look at what it has done previously, it is, generally speaking, after an inversion, we anticipate that the yield curve spread will surge higher, just like it did in the period immediately after the easings that began in 2007, and exactly the same thing happened in 2000. If we go back and look at additional history, it was after the inversion in 1988 and 1987. Then we again had this clear surge higher, and even going back into the 1980s, there was obviously the massive disruption in the savings and roll and loans crisis, but yet we did have these spikes higher. But of course, we are not seeing that now. And there's a good reason for that, and it is quite simply that the Federal Reserve is now buying both bonds on the short and long-dated ends of the curve. So we have de facto yield curve control. And that's tantamount to financial repression. Then we have to look at the repo market. Now, they have said that there is not a standing repo facility, but the reality on the ground is that there is a standing repo facility because whenever liquidity starts to deteriorate, then the Federal Reserve will certainly be there to provide as much liquidity as is possibly needed, and that leaves them open to unlimited liability. Well, then if we go back and think about, well, how on earth can some of these companies continue to rally? Well, it's because of this massive source of liquidity that has been poured into the market. But additionally, it's because of the expectation of additional supports, and that every time we get a pullback, it is being viewed as a buying opportunity because of the lack of a clear interval between negative news and the willingness of governments and central banks to wade in and provide assistance. Now, we're in an age of financial repression. We're in an age where modern monetary theory has been adopted in a very quick and quiet manner. It's what Russell Napier is referring to as the silent revolution. But what it effectively does is gives control of money supply to governments rather than to central banks. And it sounds great on paper. But the one thing that we can be assured of is that governments will overstep the bounds. We're in the foothills of a new inflationary cycle, and the clearest evidence or the clearest historical context that we have for that is 1968, the massive and really rather incredible student protests, anti-discrimination protests, race riots. Then we had notable assassinations of both Martin Luther King and then also Robert Kennedy within only about 3 months of each other. That panicked people. Then, of course, you also had the Vietnam War going on back then, but it certainly panicked politicians. They went on an incredible spending spree, and that set in motion an inflationary spiral. And it is really very likely that that is exactly what we're getting right now. And we're seeing it first in the stock market. Now, when we then think about, I think the rebound has been more impressive. If we look at the small caps represented by the AIM 100, it has been completely uncorrelated with the wider market, really. And it has clearly rebounded in a very robust manner. But now the question is, how much consolidation are we likely to get? It is right in the region of the trend mean, and it bucked the international trend in here today by declining. So there is obviously some risk being taken off the markets in here. It's at a new reaction low. There is obviously the potential that we're going to get a somewhat deeper reaction. But it's also worth highlighting that it has been trending downwards for 2 years already. And this is a clear example of what a type 2 top looks like. We had the clear trend higher, a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. We've subsequently had small range below the peak, and then a much bigger range below that peak. And now the big question is, how well will it hold this rebound, and will it be able to subsequently break the sequence of lower rally highs? Then, when we think about the Japanese market, it is still trading above the trend mean, and it's been rather quiet over the last month. The Bank of Japan owns approximately 80% of all the ETFs in Japan. Of course, ETFs have got the capability to issue additional units, so they can continue to absorb as much additional liquidity as the Bank of Japan is willing to provide in many respects. And if we just simply take a step back and think about what are the kinds of things that central banks are doing, well, they're buying up private assets. And in to the extent that that is done in domestic assets, it's a nationalization. And that's effectively what Japan is doing. They are buying up all of the private assets in the country, with the exception of property. And There is obviously then a logical conclusion to all of this, that central banks will continue to print money and they will continue to acquire assets. To the extent that assets refer to physical entities and income producing assets, then that's obviously beneficial to the country. To the extent that they represent liabilities, well, those debts can be cancelled at some point in the future. And that is, I think, eventually where we're going to end up. That eventually we're going to get to a point where the debts are so large that there will be simply multilateral intervention and the debts will be cancelled. And it does mean that we are in the throes of a bubbly environment in fixed income, and that there is clear potential that stocks will eventually start to benefit from central bank actions. It's only Japan and Switzerland have been buying shares so far. One of the things that people have been particularly worried about over the course of the last 18 months has been buybacks and the reliance of Wall Street on those buybacks. Well, with the kinds of challenges that the corporate sector are now facing, and with the fact that you have approximately 20% of all companies in the USA are effectively zombie companies, then the question in order to continue to fuel a bull market has to be, where is the source of additional new demand going to come from? Well, one answer is central banks, and that is why we still have this momentum move in a significant number of assets. It's very unlikely the US is going to engage in a new infrastructure boom this year. There isn't going to be the kind of cross-party agreement to try and get that through ahead of an election. It is, however, quite likely that China is going to engage in additional stimulative measures to try and reinvigorate consumer demand, and infrastructure is likely to be part of that. The CSI 300 was well off its lows in here today, and this doesn't look like anything other than a consolidation. Then, when we think about the industrial resources sector, well, copper prices didn't quite get up to the $3 level yesterday, but they held on to the advance in here today. And this continues to be an environment which is characterized first and foremost by the clear break of a more than 2-year downtrend in just the last couple of days. Well, then when we think about some of the industrial metal miners, and particularly the copper miners, Antofagasta is coming right back up to the upper side of a 3-year range. When we then think about BHP Billiton, then, that's no longer called BHP Billiton, so I need to reprogram myself. Simply BHP Group. It has now sustained the move above its trend mean, and it hasn't quite broken the sequence of lower rally highs yet, but it is looking increasingly likely that it will be able to manage that. When we think about the aluminium price, it's, I think, an interesting one to pay attention to, because aluminium is a key industrial resource, but it's heavily influenced by the price of energy, and it moved to a new decade low at the end of March, and it is now just about unwound its overextension relative to the trend mean. The oil price is also steadying in here, and it continues to hold this break above the peak put in early April. I continue to think that it is likely we're going to see additional upside in the oil price, but it's quite unlikely that we're going to see a sustained move higher in the oil price, and it's going to be increasingly difficult for oil to sustain a move above the $60 to $70 area, because a great deal of additional supply becomes economic at those levels. Well, when we then think about the Australian market, we have got the leadership of technology there. Then there's also the potential that resources are going to feature more prominently in terms of profitability for the equity sector. The ASX 200, however, has not quite yet been able to push back above the trend mean. Then when we think about the resources sector overall, it has been able to push back above its trend mean. There is the potential that we're going to see resources figure more highly, and not least because in the early stages of a new bull market, you often see that cyclicals should do well and that they underperform in the latter stages of a bull market. So that would be suggestive of the fact that we are in a new bull market environment overall, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the accelerating trends we see in many of the mega cap technology shares have to continue to persist. But the most important point is that we continue to see additional liquidity. And of course, the hedge against the inflationary pressures is gold. And it was in positive territory again in here today. But the most important thing here is that it continues to hold this move above the $1,800 area. Silver prices in here today were down slightly, but still very close to the peak from back in September, and still just below the $20 area. But this does look increasingly likely that we're going to see a base formation completion in silver, and that would be the beginning of the second psychological perception stage in the new precious metals bull market. One of the biggest silver miners, Fresnillo, has clearly broken the downtrend from the peak in 2016 and was in additional positive territory in here today. Hochschild Mining is another major silver producer, and it hasn't quite yet been able to break up and away, but it is consolidating here in the region of its trend mean. Silver Standard Resources, which is now SSR Mining, was one of the darlings of the silver miners over the course of the previous bull market, and it is close now to to its new recovery highs, but has held this sequence of higher reaction lows since March. So we're certainly in an interesting environment in the precious metal markets, because we've got the clearest evidence anywhere of base formation completion, and that generally suggests that we are in a new bull market. And it is difficult to trade in things that have accelerated higher, because it requires a great deal of faith in continued supply of liquidity. But the precious metals are a lot cheaper, and therefore they do look attractive at these valuations. I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.